You described Outside Magazine at one point as a literate general interest magazine, which I thought was great. And it immediately made me think of it sort of as the Playboy magazine of outdoors writing. You've got, you know, your gear porn and all that stuff. But then you have this really great long form journalism that, you know, in many ways you helped pioneer during your years there. Why did you sense that the time was ripe for that?
Well, I thought there was, you know, going back, I think there was, you know, a lot of great literature of the outdoors. I mean, Conrad, Hemingway, Twain, you know, all the way back to Homer, really. And obviously Thoreau, Muir, and so on. But I think a lot of it was because my colleagues and friends and I, you know, we had real ambitions beyond simply the outdoors. We thought the outdoors was a great setting to look at, you know, a range of issues. It was simply a backdrop for a lot of potentially great writing. And I just think it was that kind of ambition that, you know, that we all had. And because of that, we were able to attract more and more writers who saw the world in that way too. And that helped bring it along.
I think it's pretty fair to say that Into Thin Air and the story that you ran in 1996, on which John based his book, was this watershed moment for the genre, at least in our times, in that it crossed over from being a literature that people who were into the outdoors might find fascinating to the most popular kind of read that you could have, which is that people of all walks, of all levels of education, read this book, found it fascinating, mm-hmm. and it stirred up this gigantic conversation about not only the matter at hand, which was the commercialization of Everest, but really what the ethical and moral responsibilities of any human being may be to his fellow human beings. What went through your mind when you sent John out on this assignment, which you had to have known could have potentially been perilous for him?
The irony is that we sent him to warn against the very thing that he and his colleagues there, you know, wound up in the middle of. We knew there was a grave responsibility in it. It's the same thing that, you know, my friends at the Times Magazine feel when they send someone off to cover wars. It was not like that, and it was certainly we had sent people into situations where there was the potential for them to get in harm's way in the past. It wasn't to glorify risk-taking, and certainly wasn't in the Everest case. But, you know, it always comes with a heavy dose of responsibility, and ultimately, in this case, I think real guilt on our part as well, simply for having been a party to the whole thing. But he was determined to tell the story. He said, you know, other people are going to go ahead and write this story. They weren't there. They don't know what happened. Some of them aren't even climbers, you know, and I feel like, you know, they're going to cut our grass. They're going to get the story wrong. We got to do this. And I was really insistent that I said, do not, you know, don't feel any pressure on our end. His interest in was, and I think this speaks to all his work, it's about getting to the truth quickly. And I said, well, you know, you will have the definitive story when you're ready to write it. And I can't imagine you're ready to write it. I'm not sure I even want you to write it now. But I think by the time he got back to Seattle, he was very ready. And I believe he turned in about 1,000 words a day over the course of 17, 18 days. And we ran it very quickly.